future lay out there in the bullpen.
This is the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Who let those guys up here?
Well, well, well. How the turntables.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Welcome into the bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I am Joe George. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio. If you're new to the show, we started doing the show on Monday. We'll be here Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Fridays. Thursday, we debuted a new show yesterday with Jerome and Barry called Game On, a college football show. So they'll be on every Thursday. But we'll be here with you most nights, 6 o'clock. Patrick Creighton has moved to 8 p.m. for later hits. I think it's the official new name of the show. So we'll be here 6 o'clock. Got my guy Josh Chavans behind the glass on Twitter at IamJChevy. Josh, how are you?
Freezing.
Bro, it's so cold up here. Like, this building is something. Before I worked here in a past life, when I was at my last job, I was told that the AC didn't work for 6 months. Instead, now I work in an icebox. I feel like it's why I'm sick all the time, because of how cold it is up here.
You can never gauge, for me personally, I can never gauge what the temperature is going to be in this building prior to coming to work.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. Other things you can't gauge, who the hell is going to play for the Texans this weekend?
I have no idea.
We know Jalen Petrie's out. We know Jimmy Ward is out. Laramie Tunsil is questionable. CJ Stroud, his throwing shoulder is hurt. He's questionable. So who's playing for the Texans this weekend? I don't know. Maybe D'Amico Ryans is going to play this weekend, for all I know. Because at this point, it could be one of your presumed five starters on the offensive line is out there. The only one being Shaq Mason if Laramie Tunsil doesn't play. In fact, it almost feels like a guarantee that either Laramie Tunsil or CJ Stroud is not going to play this Sunday. The Texans have named three new team captains. Because your four team captains are Jimmy Ward out, Jalen Petrie out, Tunsil, Stroud, questionable. If you're naming three other captains, it sure as hell feels like one of those guys is not going to play. I'm going to say right now, I think it's Laramie. I think CJ is going to play this weekend, but he's going to be behind an offensive line that has one guy. And I know that if you guys subscribe to the ESPN 97.5 newsletter, which I don't know where to find, but I'll find out for you. All the hosts and producers have started giving out their show predictions or their game predictions. And I predicted the Texans to win this game 24-17. That was before the injury report came out today, and I don't feel as good about it. Because while the Texans' first game was fine, it wasn't terrible. It wasn't like last year's football that we were forced to watch. It wasn't great. Like I thought the Texans going into this week, week two, had a very good chance to beat Anthony Richardson and to beat the Indianapolis Colts because I think the defense is impressive. I thought C.J. Stroud played fine. I think now with Tank Dell being more involved in the offense, presumably, the offense can move the ball. Like, I was pretty good with where the Texans were at. And now there's just all these question marks of who the Texans are actually going to be throwing on the field on Sunday. I think we're at this point, we all just cross our fingers and hope for the best that we don't have to watch Davis Mills play quarterback this weekend. Because I don't want to do that. Like, I don't want to spend 3 hours of my Sunday watching Davis Mills at quarterback. Been there, done that for 2 years, man. Like, I'm over the Davis Mills stuff. I want to come in on Monday and have Jeremy and Joel yelling at each other about how CJ Stroud played. I don't want to be talking about Davis Mills. What did we learn from Davis Mills? Nothing. He stinks.
I'd flip the channel. I won't even lie to you. The thought of Davis Mills playing quarterback again, it didn't even cross my mind. I'd flip the channel.
Yeah, I don't want to watch it either. But, like, we have to. But, like, it's like, I feel like I'm being tortured. If that's what we have to do again this week. And then if Tunsil's out and you're missing all these guys from the offensive line, like I don't think it's the ultimate excuse in the world because it's football. Injuries happen. But you are at a severe disadvantage as a rookie quarterback with 90% or 80% of your offensive line out and the only guy being left standing right now is Shaq Mason. And it doesn't change how I would evaluate CJ because this is going to happen again at some point in his career, right? If CJ Stroud plays for 15 years in the NFL, whether it's here or other places and bouncing around, there will be times where he plays behind an offensive line that is severely banged up, where he has a wide receiver core that isn't talented like he currently has right now. And that's why, for me, you can look at CJ Stroud and treat him like everyone else because There are times when Tom Brady and Peyton Manning had a bunch of injuries on their offensive line, and you don't give them an excuse for an entire season. Like, you expect CJ to play at a certain level, and going into this weekend, it's just I'm prepared for it to be ugly. But one of the things from this last weekend that really frustrated me with the Texans, and where I expected it to be better this weekend, and it doesn't matter, honestly, who's at quarterback and who's at the offensive line, is the play calling. And we have to wait until Thursday to hear from the offensive coordinators. And the Texans' offensive coordinators finally met with the media yesterday. And Bobby Slowick, look, I think that we have put anyone that comes from the Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan coaching tree way above on this pedestal they don't necessarily deserve to be on. Bobby Slowick is calling plays for the first time in an NFL season, regular season game last week. Like, he didn't do this in San Francisco. So there's going to be a learning curve for him, just like there is for anyone else on the field, just like there is for CJ Stroud, just like there is for DeMeco Ryans being a first-time head coach. Like, you don't expect these things to be perfect, but the way they chose to run the ball and how little they ran the ball in the first half when the game was close, you know, the decisions they made, the play calling on the fourth downs. I didn't have an issue with going for it on fourth down. It was the play calling and the execution of those plays that were frankly a problem for me. But Bobby Slowick met with the media, and he made it clear a lot of the issues were his.
I know DeMeco mentioned it. CJ mentioned it. A lot of the offensive guys had mentioned it. We just had a lot of self-inflicted wounds, and that starts with me. You know, from the operation to getting in and out of the huddle to just being clear and on our assignments and just executing our stuff. And it was a hard environment. It was tough. You know, Baltimore is not an easy place to play, and they do some really, really tough stuff. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of chaos. And we'll be better at that this next week.
I hope so. And look, and some of the self-inflicted stuff that I even feel like he's referencing a little bit could be those Laremy Tunsil penalties that happened. I thought the holding was a bad call. He jumped off sides, I think, once in the game. And so, like, that's definitely a big part of this. You know, missing CJ Stroud, missing the easy stuff. The offensive line just wasn't great. But the self-inflicted stuff is really what's going to make CJ Stroud's life more challenging for him as he moves forward. So when you get to this game this weekend, if he's playing, which I'm going to assume he is, you know, I do find it, I don't know, odd that he didn't show up on the injury report until today, where, like, that's where it feels like that he's going to play in this game. If it was that much of a concern, I feel like it would have been earlier in the week. Now, it is weird with how much media access, you know, we get during practices now. So if CJ Stroud was severely limited, there's really not much time to, you know, like, I think you're literally allowed to be there for like 20 minutes or 20 minutes of filming. So at this point, I have little to no expectations that he's not going to play, but it needs to be better. And if he plays, I expect them to win this game. And if they're going to do it, it's because they're going to run the ball. And Versace here asks on Twitch, if Damian Pierce is going to rush for over 100 yards this weekend. I'm going to say no, because I don't think that, you know, unless he gets that big chunk play. Like, we saw Damian Pierce, sometimes his carries, like, they weren't super successful. Last week he was only, there's this metric that I think it was ESPN put it out there. His yards per carry were only 0.4 yards above expected. So, like, it's not like he's breaking 3, 4, 5 tackles every single play and being absolutely dominant. But see, Damian Pierce, like, for them to have, you know, to have success and to get a win this weekend, I think he's got to be a big part of the offense, because that's just going to make life so much easier. So if the Texans are going to win this weekend, I think Damian Pierce needs to get to like 80 yards. I think Tank Dell needs to be a big part of the offense. Like, if those two things happen offensively, I think it can lead the Texans down a path of getting a victory. But it's just one of those things where, you know, it's nice to hear Bobby Slowick acknowledge his shortcomings, acknowledge that he had a flawed first game, and all that is fine and to be expected. But specifically with a coach, I expect those adjustments to happen much faster than for CJ Stroud, because, you know, he's part of it's an age thing. Like, he's been around the game for a long time, even though his road to the NFL is a little different, being, I think it was a writer for Pro Football Focus and then a defensive coach, or like bringing in for a defensive side of the ball for the 49ers, eventually moving to offense. Like, Bobby Sloak's been around Kyle Shanahan in the NFL, so I expect his offense in general to be better, you know, better play calling, better execution overall. So I think the Texans can win this weekend. How do you feel? 713-780-3776. Lamont asks, who will score the Texans' first touchdown? I'll go Damian Pierce. We'll get the Texans' first touchdown of the season. Josh, do you have a guess? A gut feel?
Something tells me that Stroud is going to run it in. I know it's not popular to say Stroud is going to run.
That's fine.
Something tells me that's how it's going to end up. He's just going to say, you know what? F it. I'm coming in myself.
I mean, that's what the Eagles did last night. Exactly. Like, they got all the way down the field, and Jalen Hurts, as a fantasy quarterback, is awesome. If you have one of his wide receivers or one of his running backs, has to be one of the most infuriating quarterbacks in the NFL. Because, like, they're not going to hand it to Rashad Penny or to DeAndre Swift at the goal line. They're just going to give it to Jalen Hurts at the one-yard line. Like, he's Jamal Williams times 10 last year.
Like, this is a quarterback that squats 500.
It's so funny watching people get so upset. And we're going to talk about the Justin Jefferson play that happened a little bit later, because I know, like, Jeremy already said he thinks it's the dumbest rule in sports. I also hate it, but I don't really know what the correct solution is to that. It's funny watching the game last night and watching the play that, like, half the NFL was trying to outlaw was the rugby push that the Eagles run so effectively. I'll be honest, though, Josh. I don't want to see them doing that with C.J. Stroud.
Oh, God, no. Like, God, no. That is not the run I was talking about.
Like, please don't do that play. Of all the things that you can do, I don't know if a quarterback's going to get hurt on that play, but I don't want to see them try. Like, C.J. Stroud, like, find something else. Give it to Damian Pierce. Trust your running backs. But I like C.J. Stroud or Damian Pierce for first touchdown. And then the other best option, probably just because of how involved he was in the offense, was Robert Woods. Like, he's probably up there too. So I would say those are in my top three in order would be Pierce, Stroud, Robert Woods. It's the Bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I'm Joe George. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio. The Astros back in action tonight after a day off against the Kansas City Royals. Can they do better against one of these sucky teams than they did against the A's? We talk about that next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Pitter patter.
Well, pitter patter. Let's get at her.
This is the Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Joe George here with you until 7 o'clock on the Bullpen. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio, of course, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. King of Twitch says, damn, Joe, you don't read our tweets, but some power timers come in and get run. I don't even know what that means. Oh, you're mad I read Lamont's thing. Sorry, King of Twitch. You don't say something important. No, I'm just kidding. King of Twitch said, Joe, you don't have to watch, or Josh, I guess to both of us, you don't have to watch. You could just make bleep up who would actually notice. Trying to pretend like people don't watch. People watch the Texans games, King. Like, people are excited now. I know you're not, but, like, people watch the Texans game more than last year.
Yeah, more than last year, definitely.
I think so. I'm curious what the attendance will be like on Sunday. Because last year it was like one of those things between the media members that would get people hot and bothered. Because you'd have the people who are at the game and they would just, you know, the press box guy up in the press box, there's the public address announcer. You can hear him in there. And the public address announcer will come in just to the press box over the speakers and say, this game is sold out. We've sold 68,000 tickets, blah, 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 blah. And they would say that. And then media members who are in the press box would get to Twitter or X, and they would tweet out, sellout game. And then everyone with eyeballs would see 50,000 seats that are empty. And then you'd have all these angry media members and, you know, hashtag hear me out. Sorry, Sarge. But, like, all these people would, like, get upset, specifically with Sarge. And it was because it was clearly not a sellout. And he was just stating a fact of, like, what was actually happening. I think tomorrow's game, for at least the first home game, will actually be a sellout.
Really?
I would be shocked if that entire stadium is not packed tomorrow.
I don't think so.
You've got a new head coach. You've got a new quarterback. You've got Will Anderson. You got the Tank Dell thing for the Cougar fans out there. Hell, even Case Keenum's family might be there to help you out. Like, you should if you're not sold out tomorrow, I would be shocked. Like, this should be the most excited Texans fans have been for a game on. Yep, I know I said tomorrow. Sorry, Alex. Thank you for the correction. This would be the most excited, you know, Texans fans should be for a game in years. Like, I think you have to go back to 2019, because even 2020, you know, obviously not everyone can go to the game. It's like the weird pandemic rules where, like, you have to be a certain amount of seats in one row and all that stuff. So, like, I went to the last game that Bill O'Brien ever coached when they lost to the Vikings.
What a send-off.
What a send-off that game was. And then, you know, like, you can't have a lot of fans there. So as the stadium started to add fans, as the Texans were allowed to, well, the Texans were terrible at that point. Deshaun Watson was playing great football, but, like, the team was absolutely atrocious. So, like, I feel like this is the first time since 2019 where fans have a legitimate reason to be excited and happy to watch their football team in person. So, yeah, I think it'll actually look like a sellout, and it will be sold out tomorrow. It would really shock me if the attendance was that low. Like, for everything about how much this is, like, even if they're good, it's still Texans town. I don't necessarily believe that, but, you know, and Poncho says NRG will cook the books to guarantee a sellout, Joe. They haven't exactly been truthful in their attendance capacity counts recently. I just said that. Like, they say it's a sellout, and they include season ticket holders that don't go to the games, but, like, I would be shocked if it is not very loud when, yes, Clay Walker is singing the national anthem on Sunday, because that's still happening. I thought we moved past that. I thought Cool Cat Cal was going to start doing other things, but I would just be shocked if Texans fans don't show up for something that, for the first time in 4 years, actually feels like it matters. Do you not? You don't agree, Josh?
Like, I hear the points that you're saying, but, like, I don't know. I feel like, especially since, like, week one is done and they played, like, a very formidable opponent with Baltimore,
and they
right?
got smoked.
Like, okay, yes. But, like, you know, okay, for example, you feel like, you know, with, like, Colorado, before they even finished the game with TCU,
yeah,
you felt like a buzz, right? I feel like there was some of that buzz going into week one.
And you lose it.
And you lose it. So going into week two and against, and again, we're not going against Patrick Mahomes here for the home opener. But I don't know. I feel like we lost some, just a tad bit of the buzz. So will there be more in attendance than compared to last year? Absolutely. But
yeah, I think that's fair.
I'm not expecting it to be like, oh, you can't even find one seat available.
A couple texts here. When Tank gets the first touchdown, I mean, like, I think that wouldn't shock me. I think he's going to be a lot more involved. Wheatstraw asks, who leads the Texans in targets on Sunday? I think it's going to be Robert Woods. He surprised me in week one. I thought he was totally washed, to be frank, and I think he's one of the new captains, as they expect these guys, but it seemed like him and CJ had a pretty good connection. So even though if I think Tank's going to be more involved in the offense, I kind of expect Robert Woods at this point to still be leading the team in targets. And it just based off week one, I think that's where we're at. Are any of you guys going to the game? No, I'm not. Josh Beard, Paul Gallant, Patrick will all be there covering for the station, so you can probably find them. You might be able to find Paul in certain areas. But when I look at this game going forward, it's going to be two games. Is if CJ's on the field, if CJ's not on the field. If Davis Mills is out there, frankly, to me, the only thing that matters is the defense. Like, if they win the game, that's great. But frankly, all eyes will be on Will Anderson, how they contain Anthony Richardson, and what you learn from that. Because I don't think you really learn much if Davis Mills is not out there. If CJ's out there, my expectation, I think your expectation as a fan of this team, is that they should, you know, they should get a win. The Colts, I think it's -1, -1.5, depending on where you're looking at. So the Texans are a dog at home. But, look, that's a one-point swing. That means these teams, obviously, duh, like, it's a very close matchup. So if C.J. Stroud is on the field this weekend, I absolutely expect them to get the win. And if you don't expect them to get the win, then, like, I don't know what the Texans are building for. Like, that's why you've brought these guys to try to change the culture and try to beat a winning, to get the W against the Colts, who are virtually in the same position you are. They have a rookie quarterback. They're missing their most talented player in Jonathan Taylor. I expect the Texans to get a victory. It seems like Kevin disagrees. 713-780-3776 is your way into the show on the HRMP listener line and text line. Kevin, what's going on?
Hey, Joe, how you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
Oh, man, I'm good. I've been listening, and I was listening to Joel and Jeremy as well. You guys, I don't know what type of medicine you guys take, but you guys don't have a chance on Sunday. Here's why. If your offensive line, that looks a little bit shaky. Your quarterback's not proven, and the Colts don't have a proven quarterback either. However, he's outplayed all of the rookie quarterbacks thus far. And you guys just don't have a chance. And every time Indy comes to Houston, it's always pound town. Hey, have a good day.
I'm guessing Kevin's a Colts fan. I would guess, because he kept saying you guys. So look, and he's probably right about that, where like the Colts in general do have the Texans number. Like, that's well documented since the franchise has been born in 2002 or whatever it was, that like the Colts pretty much for the most part come in and they win pretty consistently at NRG. My biggest gripe with what Kevin's saying is that I don't believe in anything about Anthony Richardson. Like, yes, in one game, he might have outplayed C.J. Stroud. But in one game last year, Anthony Richardson was the Heisman favorite after he played against Utah. And then he was an absolute disaster the rest of the year. Now, Florida, look at Damian Pierce, who was barely used at Florida and then had great success his rookie year in the NFL, is clearly underwhelmed by their coaching staff and is not the program they used to be under Urban Meyer when Tebow and Percy Harvin and Aaron Hernandez were there.
I mean, disappointing documentary, by the way.
One all-time bust. Untold documentary, that series on Netflix, is I'm over it. Never watch again. Banned. It's a waste of your time. Josh, it's a waste of your time. They don't tell the story.
They did not.
They didn't talk about Aaron Hernandez. They didn't talk about the Pouncey brothers. They didn't talk about Cam Newton. Cam Newton stole a laptop, got kicked out of school. They didn't mention his name. Johnny Manziel, they did that one. They didn't tell that story right. They didn't have a single player from Texas A&M on there. Joe Thomas went on the Dan Patrick Show the next day and told the story about how after the first day of OTAs, after Johnny got drafted, he went missing in action, and the Browns had no idea where he was. That wasn't mentioned in the documentary. Everything that they produce, it's not untold. It's one-sided. Like, they leave out so much fact and just storytelling. I wanted to really, like, they tried to be 30 for 30. They're just not.
Not even close.
And 30 for 30 is not the same either. Like, yeah, it was basically like why Urban Meyer is a great coach and how much Tim Tebow loves Urban Meyer for 4 hours. And it was like the biggest waste of my life. I'll be honest. Like, I was so disappointed watching that documentary. Because, like, you think about those Florida teams. They've had, like, 136 players or, like, people arrested around that program. It is insane. I think it's, like, 136 arrests total from that program from the years they were talking about. And, like, all they wanted to talk about was Major Wright's illegal hit in a game. Because, first of all, it was illegal. Like, he got to that player way too early on the sideline. And I love Major Wright. Like, I loved him in Chicago. But, like, that play was dirty, dirty, dirty. And he got his point across. But that documentary was a bummer. But, Kevin, I disagree with you. I think that if C.J. Stroud's playing this weekend, the Texans have a very good chance to get a victory. I don't think it's going to be a blowout. I would be shocked if the Colts smoked him, as you said. But it's because I'm not an Anthony Richardson believer. I think it was a terrible draft pick. I think it's always going to be a terrible draft pick. And, frankly, like, who's your running back this weekend?
Do you have a score prediction?
Yeah, I have it 24-17. I was with CJ. So I got a one-score game. I think it's going to be a good one. I think CJ Stroud will find the end zone multiple times in his first game. And honestly, the biggest question is going to be, I guess if the Texans lose, I think it'll be for one of two reasons, or maybe both these reasons. CJ and the offense don't take any improvements. And then part two would be that anything they could have learned from playing Baltimore and Lamar Jackson, they don't execute correctly, and Anthony Richardson runs all over the place on Sunday. Which, if I'm the Indianapolis Colts, he already got hurt in that first game and had to leave. He was on the injury report with an ankle, a knee, and a shoulder on Monday after one game in the NFL. He didn't even run that much. Dre says 17-13 Colts. King of all Twitches says 7-6. Play the under. Obviously, King's a troll. But, like, the under, I don't even know what it's at. I bet you it's like 40, like 46 is my guess of like what the over-under is for this game. And it might even be lower than that. We'll find out during the break. I'll let you guys know. But let's get into some Astros. They play the Royals tonight. They face Zach Greinke. We talk about that next year on the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 on Twitch. We control the spice.
He who controls the spice controls the universe.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
A couple texts came in. Joe George here on the Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, here with you till 7 o'clock. We'll hand it off to the wagering world with Five Star in Vegas, and then Patrick Creighton with Late Hits will be up after that. So I pulled up the odds for the over-under in the Texans game. 39.5 is the over-under, according to the ESPN app. Also, they have the Texans listed as minus one favorite, so at least there, it flipped again. It's so low, it doesn't really matter. But, like, last night's game is why you have to shop. If you, like, once, you know, people get their head out of their asses in Texas and, like, we legalize gambling, why you have to shop where you know, where you're going to gamble is because depending on where you're at, like, before the game closed last night, you could have got the Vikings at plus 6, 6.5, 7, and even one book had them at 7.5. So depending on where, you know, you were at, like, you covered based on the Eagles or the Vikings, whatever side you're on. So it just depends, like, you got to shop your picks a little bit. Actually, I think you would have covered all the, I don't even remember the score from last night's game. Last night's game was interesting. It was like Kirk Cousins on primetime, but it wasn't his fault with all the fumbles. But, like, it's still, like, it's like the Kirk Cousins curse. Like, even though he's not fumbling and he's not throwing the game away, someone else is. But 39.5 for me, I'm a no on betting the under on that because it's just it's such a low number that even though these offenses might be terrible, it really only takes, like, one defensive score to completely change everything and to where you're going to – that over is going to hit and you're going to feel very bad about yourself. And a lot of times, too, I feel like you get blowouts and it feels like you're good on the under the whole time. And then all of a sudden the team starts coming back a little bit and they get garbage time touchdowns and you just completely.
Yeah, empty,
like,
calories. Yeah, sure.
You get screwed. The other thing, so let's get into some Astros stuff. So Yiner Diaz is, when he starts the catcher, Jeremy had this today. The Astros are 26-12 when Yiner Diaz is the starting catcher for the Astros. First thing, I thought he caught way more than 38 games this year. I honestly, like, I couldn't, for the life of you, if you had told me how many games he's caught this year, I probably would have said closer to 50. I really thought the number was higher than that, but apparently, so 38 games he started this year. And it just brings up, like, the question of, like, do you believe the Astros' best chance to win is only when Yiner Diaz is behind the plate? And I talked about this with BMAC the other night where, you know, I get why people are upset with Dusty Baker and his lineups. And he changes them all the time. He doesn't play the guys that you want him to play. And, you know, he rolled out that death lineup that was incredible on Sunday. But then when, you know, yesterday's game and this A's series, or I guess not yesterday, but the first three games of the A's series, like, you don't see the lineup that you want to see. And I get it. But my counter to that is just, you know, in the, like, in that second A's game, the core of your lineup, one through seven, went 3 for 24. So, like, if that's not Dusty Baker's fault. That's Chaz McCormick, Yordan Alvarez, Kyle Tucker, Bregman, Altuve, Pena. Like, the guys you need to come through are just consistently not at this point. And it, look, Hunter Brown's start on Wednesday was awesome. 5 no-hit innings. That might be one of the worst feelings in sports is being Ryan Pressly in that moment. Like, you have, what, 8 1/3, I guess, of no-hit ball. And then if the shift still existed, that no-hitter stays intact. Obviously, they gave up a couple runs after that. But, like, you had another no-hitter right there, two outs away, and you're trying to, you know, finish it for the entire team and you fail to do so, that's tough. Like, that's got to be, like, one of the worst feelings in sports where even though you win the game, you lost something that, like, actually mattered. But as they play the Royals, you know, you play the 99 loss, now the 100 loss, A's finally. You play the Royals now who have 100 losses on the season, plus. This is where you need to take advantage. You know, the Rangers have won six straight games. They're pretty much dominating everyone again. The offense for them looks much better, even without, now Scherzer out for the entire season, including the postseason. Obviously, no DeGrom. Like, the Rangers are still a real threat. Now, the thing they did well for you is that they've kind of pushed back the Blue Jays. And it kind of feels like at this point that between the Mariners, between the Mariners, the Astros, and the Rangers, that all three teams are going to make the playoffs. I think the only way at this point that does not happen is if the Rangers or the Mariners, when they play seven times in the last 10 games, like if one of them just absolutely dominates, like if they go 6-1, that's going to push someone out of the playoffs. But at this very moment, all three teams are getting in. The order is very to be determined, but I still believe the Astros are going to win the division. So Josh, I'll ask you this question. If the Astros win the division, it will be by how many games?
I'm going with three. Three.
Okay. I like three. And also, I'm right there with you. I also have it at three. And it's not because that the Astros can't run away with this. They can. They play a lot of bad teams. Like, you play the Royals. I think they actually have another series with the Royals. You play the Orioles, who are obviously very good, number one seed. That's going to be a big series because it's almost going to feel like another test run for the Orioles to see how well they stack up against you going into the playoffs. Because, look, if you go based off seeding right now, that's 1-2, Astros, Orioles. I think the Orioles are still a year away from being a World Series contending team. In my view, the two most likely teams to come out of the American League and represent the AL in the World Series are the Houston Astros and the Seattle Mariners. I think those are the two best teams in the American League in terms of being built for the postseason. The biggest flaw for the Mariners is that this dumb organization traded away their closer at the deadline, and it has been a disaster for them in parts for this season. Like the fact that they thought that this is the second time, this is Kendall Graveman too, when they traded him to the Astros a couple years ago. Like, they know they're not going to re-sign them. So instead of not re-signing them and just losing them in free agency like the Astros would do, they trade away key pieces in the middle of a playoff push. It's just baffling to me. But because of the strength of the Mariners pitching staff, I think that those are the two best teams most likely to come out of the American League. It's the Mariners or the Astros. And it would be interesting that if they play in the ALDS again, like, I just think it's going to be the winner of that series that goes all the way. I don't think it's going to be the Rangers. I don't think their bullpen's a joke, too, way more than the Mariners. Their lineup's super hot and cold, and I don't believe in their starting pitching. The Astros starting pitching can be better. Is it always better? No. But the biggest thing I think we learned from this week, and this was an idea that Jeremy put out in the Killer Bees the other day, was that if Hunter Brown is going to be part of the playoffs, they need to do exactly what they did on Wednesday, which is two times through the rotation and take him out. It does not matter if that takes three innings, it takes five innings, it takes six innings, like whatever it is. Two times through the rotation, I guess it can't take six. Math is hard. Two times through the rotation, and then Hunter Brown comes out of the game because that is when he can be, I think, the most effective. You let him let loose, let him ramp up as much as he can, and hopefully, cross your fingers, he doesn't fall apart. Because if Hunter Brown can be that guy, not no-hit good, not saying, like, go get a no-hitter every time you're out there, but his stuff was nasty on Wednesday night. If he can be that, and hopefully we see a good start from Christian Javier tonight, like, it would be a disaster if he gets shelled by the Royals, who, like, they have, like, two good players on their roster with Bobby Witt, and maybe it's one good player. Like, Bobby Witt's awesome. But besides that, they're a disaster of a baseball team like the Oakland A's. If Christian Javier is not good in this game tonight, it's a major concern because you just need these guys to be serviceable. And I don't think they have been. And the way Justin Verlander pitched his last two starts, he's not good enough. Like, I say the Astros have the best chance to get there, but part of that is It's like the Golden State Warrior, LeBron James, Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady philosophy. Why are we picking against anyone to come out of that league if they're there? Like, why would you ever pick against Tom Brady to go to the Super Bowl? It never made any sense, but people do it all the time. At this point, I'm one of these idiots. I didn't pick Patrick Mahomes to go to the Super Bowl this year. Like, why would I do that? I don't know. But, like, until he's gone or until someone from, you know, the AFC goes to the Super Bowl and wins it, it feels like there's really, really no reason to pick against Patrick Mahomes. And I have the same philosophy with the Astros. Like, they should go to the World Series. Yes, they've gone, what, 3 times in the last 7 years. It doesn't mean they go every year, but going into the playoffs, they still have the most talent, the most experience, and just the pedigree to be back in the World Series. So I'm going to stick with it and say they're going to go back to the World Series this year, even though they're, what, like a half game up on the Rangers right now in their own division?
I think, just going a little bit off track, I think you, when you brought up the Kansas City Chiefs, I think you just sparked a conversation in my mind, meaning that, you know, after the Super Bowl, a lot of people were saying, oh, in order for it to be a dynasty, it needs to be 3. You following?
Yep.
Do you feel like the Astros are kind of parallel with the Chiefs in that way? Like, or for it to be an official dynasty, it needs to be 3?
Dynasties are weird conversations because, and Dre, correct me, 4 World Series in 6 years, duh. I consider the Astros a dynasty already.
Already, okay.
Because I do view it differently than other sports. I think it is harder to go to the World Series than it is to in any other sport. Like, it's harder to go to the World Series than the Super Bowl. Super Bowl, I know it's only one game, so, like, the counter-argument is, well, if you lose one game, you're out. Like, I get that. But, like, we've seen so many guys and so many teams go on these runs where, like, they consistently go to the Super Bowl. Even to go back to, like, the Cowboys, the 49ers, the Steelers. Forever, there's always these runs where these teams consistently go to the Super Bowl. And even, like, you know, in basketball, it's the same thing. You know, you have basically these chunks of time. You have the Celtics, the Lakers, the Bulls, the Spurs, the Lakers, LeBron. I'll just put in his own, like, little category, the Warriors. Or, like, just, like, chunks of time, people consistently go to the championship games in those respective sports. Realistically, in baseball, like, the closest thing you have is the Astros. I guess you can put the Giants in that category. But, like, they won a World Series, missed the playoffs, won a World Series, missed the playoffs, won a World Series, haven't been back since. You know, I think that was, what, 10, 12, 14? The Yankees, you know, even the Red Sox, they went how many years, you know, 90 years or whatever it was without going to a World Series or winning a World Series, and they've won a bunch. So it's like, that's where I think the Astros kind of already qualify as a dynasty. Another title would help, though.
I think another title would solidify it, no question.
It would for sure. And also, it just kind of, you have 17, like, you can't ignore 2017. You can't ignore the fact, like, look, they cheated. Like, everyone knows it. It doesn't really matter to me. Everyone was cheating in baseball. The Astros just happened to cheat, win, and get caught. Like, they got the trifecta that no one else got. Like, a lot of people cheated and got caught, but no one else won. So the Astros, they cheated, they got caught, but they also won a World Series. So, like, I don't view that personally as an asterisk, but I also don't think, like, Barry Bonds should be held out of the Hall of Fame because everyone was using steroids. So I think I'm in the majority of that, but so I view them as a dynasty already. I don't think you have to win championships always. I know that's, like, I wouldn't call the Philadelphia Eagles with Andy Reid a dynasty. You know, they went to one Super Bowl, but they went to the NFC title game, like, what, like 5-6 years in a row? But they didn't win anything of great consequence. So I view the Astros as a dynasty already. All right, last night we saw Jeremy called it one of the worst rules in sports, the dumbest rules in sports, play out in effect as Justin Jefferson fumbled as the ball went out the back of the end zone. We hit on that next, and a little more Astros with you guys at 713-780-3776 on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.com. You need to learn.
Let the boy watch. He needs to learn the way I learned from my father.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Final segment of the Bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Joe George here with you. Be here most days at 6 o'clock. We'll have the Wagering World with Five Star in Vegas coming up next, and then Late Hits with Patrick Creighton at 8 o'clock after that. Also want to give a shout-out to my guys Andrew Carlson, Sean Mapes. No BMAC this weekend. Happy birthday, BMAC. Andrew and Sean will have the bullpen tomorrow from 12 to 2. And we always like dissenting opinions on any show because it's boring if everyone agrees with each other. So I said I think that the World Series is the hardest championship to get to. Greg disagrees. Greg, tell me why I'm wrong.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing, man? I appreciate the show. I love the show, man.
Appreciate it.
Hey, but what I'm saying is that I think baseball has money to throw around. You look at the Yankees, where they got 26 World Series, and then you look at basketball with the Boston Celtics. They have, what, 13, 14, 17? I don't know. I'm not going to say it. But then when you look at the NFL, what, the Patriots, what, they have, what, seven? Cowboys got five. San Francisco got five. Steelers got six. It's harder in football to get back because baseball was throwing away money. The Yankees were throwing money, and they're getting the best players to continue to do what they did. They got Babe Ruth from Boston to continue to do what they did. I'm just saying the money with baseball and the money with basketball was actually championships, and that's what the difference is. It's harder in football to get back to a championship. And you already know that there is no loser that besides Buffalo that got the back-to-back. The winners, they never get back-to-back. I'm going to hang up and listen, man. Great show. I love the new lineup. Y'all keep doing what y'all doing.
Thanks,
sorry,
Greg.
I'm late, but I'm online.
Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it. Look, I think that's a fair point of view that in Major League Baseball, in the NFL, if you make a mistake in the NFL, you can't really course correct it without it taking a couple years to fix it, right? Like, if the Texans got it wrong with C.J. Stroud, they're screwed for the next 3 or 4 years. Like, it's just the reality of the situation. They're not going to bail on C.J. Stroud in 2 years or 3 years, where the New York Yankees, they can miss on every single prospect in the world. They can be terrible at drafting players. And in the past, the Yankees would just buy every single player they possibly could. And that was a huge advantage to them because all they would have to do is just spend. Even the Houston Astros, like, they obviously have had great success through the draft and really the best success we've seen. I think really it's hard to even quantify what the Astros have done through the draft, have all these guys consistently have success and be great players when they come up. Even the nobodies, no offense, JP France, but like, no one expected anything from JP France. He shows up and right now there's a real conversation. He's the number three starter. In theory, the Astros can fix all their problems with money. Like, in the offseason, they can go out and spend a bunch of millions of dollars and fix the rotation if they have concerns. And they can, you know, they can afford to replace Michael Brantley and just choose to spend the money how they see fit. So I think that's a fair point. And, like, not necessarily, like, with money, but with the fact that if you don't succeed in the draft and you miss on something, money solves all your problems in baseball in a way different way than it does in the NFL and the NBA. Do you agree with that, Josh?
Oh, absolutely. Nothing to combat
it's like,
that with.
Because even like, you know, like, we'll use your team. They're really the only team, the Miami Heat, that like won their championships purely based on money, right? Like, even the Oklahoma City Thunder, like, they built their team through the draft. The Golden State Warriors, they built their team through their draft, and then they added Kevin Durant. Like, the Heat, two separate times, like, they had Dwayne Wade. They added Shaq. They won a title. They had Dwayne Wade. They added Chris Bosh, LeBron, and eventually Ray Allen, and they won their championships that way. For the most part in the NBA, like, these good teams, you know, Nikola Jokic was taken in the second round during a Taco Bell commercial. They drafted Jamal Murray. They drafted Michael Porter Jr. So, like, they built through the draft for the most part. Like, I think is, like, the big difference.
The only thing I would say is about the 06 Heat team is that Wade was still on his rookie deal.
That's
the only thing I would say about that.
Like, Alonzo Mourning.
Yeah, Alonzo Mourning. Shaq was making money. Shaq was making some bread.
D-Wade's, like, probably one of my favorite basketball players of all time. Like, it's just, I mean, him being from Chicago, like, definitely, like, has, like, a bias for me. But, like, I love the way he plays basketball. Like, him, Kobe, Michael. Like, even though he wasn't as talented as those other two guys, like, he's still a Hall of Fame player, obviously. I just, like, when I would play 2K, like, Dwayne Wade was always, like,
absolutely,
gotta get him. Like, absolutely, gotta get to you. He can't shoot threes in the video games usually, but, like, gotta get D-Wade. Like, I absolutely love everything about him. So last night during the Eagles and the Vikings game, we saw One of the, I think, weirder rules in sports, and whether you think it's like the dumbest rule or it makes sense, we saw Justin Jefferson as he's reaching over the pylon. He fumbles the ball, goes flying out the back of the end zone, and it becomes a touchback, and the Eagles get the ball. I don't love this rule, but I also don't really know how you counter it. Because my first issue with the rule is I wish it was just standard. That if no one touches the ball and you fumble the ball out of bounds, it's a turnover anywhere on the field. So if you fumble the ball going out the back of the end zone, Justin Jefferson does, it is the Eagles' ball. If Justin Jefferson does that at the 50-yard line and no one touches the ball, like it's not batted around by the defense as well, I kind of wish they would just be uniform and that would be a turnover as well. I'm going to be in the minority of that. I'm probably going to end up on Bad Take Boulevard because of that. But like, I don't like how it's in the back of the end zone. It's a turnover. It goes to the other team. But the exact same play happens on the 50-yard line, and it's not. Like, one thing, we were talking about this when the Killer Bees, and I mentioned how on a kick return, you can step out of bounds intentionally, touch the ball, and it's a penalty, and the ball is considered out of bounds, and it goes to the 40-yard line. So a player can force that to happen, but it's the same as if the ball is just kicked directly out of bounds. Like, I don't like that either. I just need, like, these rules to be uniform. So, like, if it's going to be a turnover out the back of the end zone, it should be a turnover anywhere on the field.
I'm going to one-up you.
Okay.
I like it.
You like it?
I do. I love the fact how impactful it is to the game. We all know the point of the game is to score and to get touchdowns, right? So to be that close to the end zone and all of a sudden the change of possession – and now, obviously, the other team can march down the field. I just love the fact that it could completely flip a game and stresses the importance of holding on to the football, especially in the red zone.
It does. Like, and that's where I don't have a big problem with, like, the rule itself, like the idea of it, because it is important. Like, you should – because also, like, if you don't consider a touchback and a turnover, like, I think the first question is, well, what's the solution? And – I don't really know, like, they shouldn't get the ball on the one, because what if that play happened and it was an 80-yard touchdown? What if it was DeSean Jackson, you know, when he did the back, like, when he fell onto his back in the end zone and he dropped the ball, he just dropped the ball too early one time. Like, what if it was the opposite? What if he threw it into the stands on a 90-yard touchdown as he's at the one-yard line? Like, you can't just give him the ball at the one. Like, that's not okay either. So, my only suggestion would be, is that if you're going to be pro, the offense gets the ball back, it goes back to where the ball was placed originally, where the snap was at, and a loss of down. Like, that would be my only compromise, where if you're not going to do a turnover, you have to take a down away from them. You have to go back to wherever the ball was, whether that's the 15 or the one on the other side of the field. Like, but it's also a dumb rule. Like, I get why people hate it, because it's like,
I get it too. I really do.
It's like, and I think it's one of those where I would bet if you like surveyed NFL fans, it's almost 50-50. Like, I would bet you there's like a very good chance. Like, it is very close to down the middle. And most people who hate it would say that they hate it because like they're Vikings fans. Like, it's happened to them recently, and that's where they have a problem with it. All right, I'm Joe George. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio. Josh Chavans behind the glass on Twitter at IMJ Chevy. Make sure you check out the bullpen with tomorrow will be Mapes and Andrew Carlson from 12 to 2. Coming up next, we have the Wagering World with Five Star in Vegas and then Late Hits. That's all next. Talk to you guys on Monday.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Dude.
Like I told my last wife, I says, honey, I never drive faster than I can see. Besides that, it's all in the reflexes.